Sarah Cahill, you are a pianist. You're coming here to Detroit, also to Bowling Green, and you have a really interesting program, which I want to talk about. It's called The Future is Female. First of all, I want to put out there that you're appearing Friday, March 22nd. Two performances, right? Or are they part of the same performance? There's a 7 o'clock and an 8:30 p.m. show.
Right. They're two separate programs.
Okay.
So that if people do want to stay, they can hear a lot of different music.
They can run out and grab a snack and come back.
Exactly.
For the second half.
Just a privilege to be playing in the Rivera Court with Diego Rivera's murals. It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful space. That is at the Detroit Institute of Arts. And then you're coming to Bowling Green for the Music at the Forefront series. That's happening Monday, March 25th
right.
at 8 o'clock. Have you been there for the New Music Festival?
I've never been there, and I've always wanted to go, and I've heard so much about it, and, you know, great programs and a lot of composers and musicians I admire, and I've admired Kurt Dolls' work for many, many years.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to be coming to both places.
Kurt Dolls, the director of the Mid-American Center for Contemporary Music. Little shout out to Kurt.
Yes.
I'm sure he's listening. So that's happening Monday at 8 o'clock p.m., March 25th at BGSU. This is going to be in the Moore Musical Arts Center. I believe they are in Bryan Recital Hall, which is in fairly intimate space. So let's talk about the program that you're doing. It's called The Future is Female. This is a, I guess you could say, a hot button topic, the idea of women composers and promoting women composers and performers, and you certainly have a vested interest in that. I wonder if you can give us an introduction to the program.
Yeah, it is, I'm glad you say hot button topic, because I've always been sort of a little ambivalent about all women composer programs and putting composers together just based on gender. I'm sorry about the barking dog. But I think at the same time, I think it is useful and valuable to highlight these. I mean, it's all about the music, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the music itself that is important and needs to be heard. And I felt, I mean, partly from my own education, because like every other musician, I grew up with the canon of great, great music by white male composers. I mean, we hear about Clara Schumann and Fanny Mendelssohn, but when I was growing up, I never heard their music.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually very inspired by the early music movement and hearing great Baroque composers like Isabel Leonarda and Cozzolani, and composers that, you know, really, really great performances of this music that deserved so much to be heard and was so exciting to be heard after so long. And so I felt the need to learn lots of music by women around the world, because I also have played mainly American music, and I've also always worked with women composers. Like, I love working with Pauline Oliveris and Anaya Lockwood and Julia Wolf and lots of composers who are women, but not in a global perspective. So Vítislava Kaprilová from Czechoslovakia, or to hear Teresa Carreño from Venezuela and the music that she wrote at age 15, which is extraordinary. And every page makes you just sort of, I don't know, just like go, oh, this is amazing. And what is she going to do next? So I really love this music. And I wanted to focus on music by women. And again, you know, I am ambivalent in a way. And it's sort of the whole idea of the year of the woman, or here, let's look at, you know, 10 great women writers and all those lists that are popping up.
You know, it's one thing to come up with the idea, oh, I'm going to do a program of music by female composers. I mean,
right.
A lot of people do that. But you mentioned global, and you mentioned a couple of the names here, which I'm going to let you pronounce them all, by the way. You're really taking a deep dive. You're really going above and beyond what I've seen anybody do before with this sort of program.
Thank you.
And so many different pieces here that I've never heard before, and composers that I've never heard of. And I pride myself on you know, being aware of a lot of composers. So you're introducing a lot of things here. And certainly a lot of the people that will be in the audience will not have heard this music before. Can you give us a sense of how you put this program together, where you found the music? Did you commission any of these works, or are they all found pieces for you?
Yeah, so one piece which will be on both programs is by a young Bay Area composer, Teresa Wong. And she wrote, inspired by Nina Simone's song, Images. Her piece is called She Dances Naked Under Palm Trees. And very, very beautiful song. And she's written a really wonderful piece, and I feel privileged to premiere it. Zbukli Martinaitytei is a Lithuanian composer and also young. I think she's in her early 30s. And she's a composer whose name I had encountered, and I ordered her score online. I always like, it's always good to pay for scores rather than get them for free. But then she wrote to me and she said, this is going to be a premiere because she wrote it in 2009, this piece called Heights and Depths of Love. And she wrote it for a pianist who then, I guess, stopped playing. So it was never premiered. So that's really great. And I'm going to play that both at the Detroit Institute of Arts and Bowling Green, because it's a relatively new piece, 2009, but it's very appealing and immediately engaging and, I guess the word would be accessible to audiences. So, and then Frangis Alizadeh, a composer from Azerbaijan, and she puts beaded necklaces on the strings to evoke the sound of the tar, a string instrument from Azerbaijan. I wanted to not just look to Europe, which is easy to do, of course, when you go outside of the United States. It's easy to say, well, who's in France and Germany? But really to look beyond and, you know, what composers are in Latin America, who's in China, who's in Africa, because I think we certainly need to think that way these days.
Well, and I think that it's certainly an enticing idea to know that you're going to go into a program and hear all of these different influences by composers who were writing, you know, over a span of centuries. You really have a huge swath of composers here.
Yeah.
And with female composers, you know, you have some of the usual suspects. You mentioned a couple of them. But you also have these people that we're being introduced to, and it sounds like a really interesting program. I'm curious, do you talk about the pieces at all, or do you just perform them? How do you conduct the recital?
I love to talk about the pieces. I don't think there would be program notes, so I love talking about them, and in some cases I have information from the composer herself. So I've worked a lot with Anaya Lockwood, and I'm playing a piece of hers called Ear Walking Woman, which is really an exploration of the piano and uses things like mallets made with super balls and Tibetan bell bowl on the strings and various implements, cedar moth balls and things. So that's a beautiful piece that's unusual sounds, Ear Walking Woman. And so I'll talk about what she's told me directly about the piece and how she thought of it. And then there are some great stories, like Hélène de Manquerolles, who lived from 1764 to 1836. And she's not very well known. And she wrote this fantastic sonata. And I don't know if the story is true, but there's a story that she saved herself from being guillotined in the French Revolution by breaking into Variations on the Marseillaise.
Wow.
That's true. But I mean, there are so many great stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Birds at Dawn by Fannie Charles Dillon. She was John Cage's high school teacher here in California, and she notates bird songs. So the piece begins with a page of the specific bird songs that she's heard, and then she puts it all together. And this was 1911, I think, which is actually, sorry, 1919, but I think it's still before Olivier Messiaen did it, notated bird songs in his piano pieces. And it's great. And then when you look up a recording online, you think, well, has this been recorded? You know who recorded it is the great pianist Joseph Hoffman.
Mm.
So anyway, things like that. It,
yeah.
There are a lot of great, great stories.
I'm talking with pianist Sarah Cahill, who is coming to Detroit on March 22nd. She's doing two shows there at the Detroit Institute of Arts at 7 o'clock p.m. and 8:30 p.m. Also at Bowling Green State University for Music at the Forefront. That's Monday, March 25th at 8 o'clock p.m. And Sarah, I just want to give listeners who may not be familiar with you a sense of who you are. And what you do. I mean, you know, the New York Times has called you an intrepid illuminator of the classical avant-garde, and you have all these wonderful things to your credit. Looking at your website, it says, you know, you're a pianist, writer, and producer. But I think it goes much deeper than that, really. You've done writing, you've been teaching, you've been a music critic, you've commissioned over 60, you know, works, you've released over 20 albums. You are really vested in promoting music by modern composers. And I guess maybe the first question is, you know, where does that come from? How did you get this interest in new music?
Well, I was trained as a classical pianist, and I didn't really play much new music. And then the first piece that was given to me as a present was China Gates by John Adams, and I was 17. And I think that sort of turned things around. And
when you say it was given to you, it was actually dedicated to you, right?
Yes, it was dedicated
to
me, yes. But I mean the score, yeah. And I think having that experience at 17 of getting a brand new piece, The Ink Still Wet, and trying to figure it out and saying, okay, what is this? How do I explore it? What do I do with it? Because it was a piece of minimalism, and that was still fairly new at the time. And so that process becomes sort of addictive of we know what to do with a Beethoven sonata. There's a whole legacy and, in a way, a whole baggage, because when you play that Beethoven sonata, you're dealing with everybody who plays that Beethoven sonata. Mm-hmm. So I love delving into new work. And I think also through writing music reviews for a long time, for 20 years, for alternative weeklies and various places, and also writing liner notes for composers and program notes for composers, that was a great experience in asking questions about what is this piece about? How do I explain it for readers? How do I communicate? And it was all about communication and taking that, you know, the cipher on the page and making it real and available to the audience.
You talk about the legacy of Beethoven sonatas, for instance, and then you mentioned that piece by John Adams, China Gates, which is really a well-known piece. I mean, a lot of pianists have played that. And I guess the connection I want to make there is that you are sort of the part of the legacy of that piece in itself.
Well, thank you. It's been a great experience. It makes me think, how does one piece of music change over time? Because I remember when that piece was new, and no one would really have anything to do with it. And I played it for competitions where it was the, you know, the 20th century piece that was required. And it was just, everybody turned up their nose at that piece. And no one could really figure it out. And then it started to be played and recorded, and Ursel Oppens recorded it, and Christopher O'Reilly, and various pianists. And then I remember when Vadim Kolodenko, I think, opened his set at the Van Cliburn competition with that piece. And now it's just played a lot, as you say. So it's so interesting to see how a piece of music evolves over time. And you think about, you know, even that Beethoven sonata had that same process, like Opus 111. Can you imagine how his audiences thought about that piece?
It's a journey that's been repeated many times, I imagine. And, and it makes me curious nowadays, and you certainly have experience, you know, as a critic or somebody who writes about music and somebody who presents it on the radio. How do we make the connection to listeners and potential listeners that they should be open to hearing new works, or they should, you know, perhaps expand their horizons, you know, for lack of a to get a little cliche there. But I mean, how do we introduce new audiences to this
music? How do you do it on your show?
I just do it. You know?
And what feedback do you get?
It runs the gamut. I mean, you know, because people use music differently for at different times of day, and they have different expectations for different things. And I will hear, you know, in the same piece of music that it's given at the same time of day, I will hear one listener who will say, you know, that completely spoiled my lunch. And another listener will say, what was that? It was so interesting. So, you know, you basically have to take a risk, I think, in presenting.
Yes, I think that's true. And probably talking about it helps as well. But there's one listener on my radio show who is a Czech man, and he's blind and low income. And he just craves adventurous music. So he won't like the safe classical music. But if I play something brand new that's sort of a little difficult, then he always calls up with great enthusiasm. So, you never know.
It becomes, you know, a process, I think, of learning how to listen. And the people that are interested in investing that kind of energy and listening to something, and sort of, you know, you reach a critical mass at a certain point, and you become aware of what the music is doing. And you hear something completely differently, you know, a few years down the road from when you first heard it.
Exactly.
We just have to convince people to take that first step.
Right. My father, when he was in the Army, heard the Berg Violin Concerto on a recording, and he didn't like it. And a friend said, listen to this every day for, I don't know if it was a week or 2 weeks, and it'll be your favorite piece. And and then it was.
Yeah. Your dad had a radio show, did he not? Did I read that?
Yes, he did. KPFA in 1941, Rare French Records. Yeah. And in those days, you know, we didn't have everything on YouTube. So when there was a new recording of Stravinsky conducting Symphony of Psalms or something, one person would get that record and then invite everyone else to come and sit around the record player and listen to it. And it was just really exciting.
I want to mention your website is at sarahcahill.com. That's Sarah with an H and then C-A-H-I-L-L.com. They can find information about these performances at Detroit Institute of Arts, happening Friday evening at 7 o'clock and 8:30 p.m. Also at Bowling Green State University on March 25th. That's this Monday at 8 o'clock p.m.
Yeah. And the Bowling Green program will have more recent music and maybe, you know, more new music, because I think audiences there are more used to a newer program. So that will be a Northern Irish composer, Deirdre Grippen, and Hannah Kendall, who's a young Black British composer, and Tanya Leon from, you know, Afro-Cuban composer.
Yeah, that's great. I like that you're tailoring the program for your audience.
Well, thank you.
Let me ask you, you've worked with so many different composers, and you teach as well, and I assume that you've worked with a lot of young pianists. What piece of advice do you think is valuable, both for young composers and for people who want to perform music by living composers?
I would say not to discount anything. And there's always a composer out there or a piece of music that is right for you. So to say, I mean, so many people say, oh, I don't like 20th century music, or I don't like, you know, they think of it they hear a Stockhausen Klavierstück or something and then say, well, I don't like 20th century music. But many of the students I've had at the San Francisco Conservatory, if they hear they're looking for something virtuosic, they're looking for something to sink their teeth into, they're looking for a showpiece or a competition piece. And so if they hear the Ligeti Etudes, you know, that they get very excited about that. People love Frederick Shevsky, The People United Will Never Be Defeated. That's such a great piece. And yeah, that's a piece that really encapsulates so much of the history of music. There's classical music, there's Baroque, there's Romantic. I mean, everything is in that piece. And every technique and device known to the history of the piano. So I think my advice would be it just takes some searching, and you have to have curiosity and do research, like you obviously do, and keep looking.
Yeah. Piano Sarah Cahill is coming to Detroit Institute of the Arts, also to Bowling Green State University, bringing her program The Future is Female, featuring music by women from around the world. It's happening Friday evening, that's March 22nd at 7 o'clock, also at 8:30 p.m. in the Rivera Court of Detroit Institute of the Arts, and at Bowling Green State University in the Moore Musical Arts Center, that's Bryan Recital Hall, Monday evening, March 25th at 8 o'clock p.m. You can find more information on both of these concerts and the project in general at Sarah's website, Sarah, with an H, Cahill, CAHILL.com. Sarah Cahill, thank you for joining us by phone out there in sunny California, and we look forward to having you here in our area.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to talk with you.